Hey, beautiful soul. This is the Menopause Coach Podcast with me, your host, Adele Johnston. I'm helping you create a vibrant life of joy and happiness without your menopause stealing your personal power and sass. Together, we're making menopause mainstream.
And then another symptom you might not be having kind of full pelvic floor function is if you're having feelings of heaviness and dragging or bulging sensation in the vagina or even at the anus. All these kind of symptoms would show signs of there being an issue of either weakness, underactivity or overactivity of the pelvic floor muscles.
Welcome back to another episode of the Menopause Coach Podcast. I have a very special guest with me today, ladies, and I just know that you are going to be like, oh yes, thank you so much for bringing Jenny Hughes to the podcast, Adele. Because a while back, I think some of you will remember this, on my Instagram stories, I was away traveling Europe with my family and took the kids to a trampoline park and spent an abundance of about 3 hours together doing the Ninja Warrior obstacle course, jumping over all these different obstacles, climbing cargo nets and bouncing on trampolines. And it was the most fun that I have had in a very, very long time. And I got a lot of you messaging and emailing after it saying, Adele, how did you not pee your pants? So I was absolutely delighted when Jenny and I got connected. And what better a person to come on than a physiotherapy pelvic floor expert to come and talk with us to answer all of those questions that came into the inbox. So I am delighted to introduce to you our podcast episode today with guest expert Jenny Hughes. She is a pelvic health physio with a multidimensional approach to this. So she specializes in bladder, bowel, and sexual dysfunction as her main areas of focus. She runs a very successful company of her own called Four Therapy, F-O-U-R Therapy, and had spent over 8 years in the NHS beforehand when she set up her own business in 2020. She also is a Pilates instructor across locations in London. So absolutely pleasure to have you here with us today, Jenny. Do you want to just say hi and introduce yourself?
Thanks, Adele. That's such a lovely introduction. That's so great. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's a privilege to be here. So my name's Jenny. Hi, everyone. I have specialized in pelvic health physiotherapy now for the last 4 years. And I absolutely love it. I was specialized in musculoskeletal physiotherapy before, and then the pelvis just really took me and I kind of went with it, did all the training and specialized in women's health physiotherapy before then specializing in men's health physiotherapy. I love the area. I love kind of everything that it entails, the women and the men that I work with as well. And it's just something that's really taken me and I've really enjoyed kind of working in this area over the last 4 years or so.
We need more people like you in our lives for sure. Now, to start off our topic of conversation with this, it's probably quite apt that I ask you a bit about what is our pelvic floor, because I know that this is something that comes up a lot of the time. I remember back when I was pregnant with my twins and all of my consultancy care would constantly remind me, as soon as you have them, pelvic floor exercises, you know, you're kind of almost drilled into your pelvic floor. So what is our pelvic floor?
The pelvic floor is a band of muscles that span underneath the pelvis bone. So it attaches, they attach to the pubic bone at the front, they wrap round and attach to the tailbone at the back, and then also to the two seated bones. So they span all the way underneath the pelvis, acting like a bowl-like. And they're a group of muscles which help support all the organs. So they essentially support the bladder, the uterus, and the bowel. So they're there to help support. Their main help is to help with all the function of those organs and to help and act as kind of a shock absorber. So that's why when things like higher impact exercise, such as kind of trampolining, the pelvic floor has to do a lot and is involved a lot in helping support those three organs with that higher increase in activity. So they're really, really important. And then that's why kind of with pregnancy as well, it's really drilled into people. And actually, it's the first kind of time that people really hear about the pelvic floor is when they actually are pregnant, because then with the baby and with the birth and everything kind of involved, it's really important to maintain the health of the pelvic floor. So they're a really important group of muscles, and they're also really important in our core cylinder. So thinking about the core cylinder with the diaphragm at the top and the pelvic floor at the bottom, and then the abdominal muscles and the back muscles, they help form up that core cylinder. So again, really important when it comes to breathing, abdominal work, core work, for the pelvic floor to be functioning properly as well.
And I think this is probably the first time that I've heard anyone refer to the pelvic floor muscle group as the core, as part of your core. Mm. Because we all do think about the core being the protective muscles around the back and the front, so our back muscles and our abdominals and obliques. But what you've taught me today, that actually a part of our core group is actually then the support underneath as well. And it's so obvious when you say that. So thank you. I have learned something straight away. I love it.
It is, and they are at the center of our body. You know, the pelvic floor is the center of our body, where we think about where those muscles are. So of course they have so much to do with everything else. You know, that's why in an examination, when I see my clients, we do a whole body check as well. It's not just focusing on the pelvic floor, because there's so many factors that influence the pelvic floor. So it's really important that we check the diaphragm, we check the abdominals, we check them in standing, in lying, in sitting, because all these different positions and all these different kind of factors really affect the pelvic floor and how it functions.
So talking about factors that influence the pelvic floor, what would they be?
I mean, there's so many. So coming at it from a pregnancy point of view, because our pelvic floor goes through so many changes. If we're just thinking about women, it goes through so many changes during our life. From a kind of pregnancy point of view, from a postnatal point of view, from then a perimenopause point of view, and then a menopausal point of view, our pelvic floor is constantly having changes occur to it. And that might be from kind of a pressure from pregnancy, of growing a baby, all the hormonal changes that come with growing a baby as well, to then the delivery. And if we're thinking of a vaginal delivery especially, there's a big element of strain and weakening on the pelvic floor there. And then postnatally, we've got to make sure that we take into account this changed pelvic floor from a hormonal, from a pressure and a weakened point of view, that when we start to go back to doing exercise and start doing things that we enjoy again, that the pelvic floor is in a good position to do so, and that the pelvic floor is actually going to function well and withstand pressures well. So we don't then run risk of urinary, bowel, or other problems such as prolapse. And then again, coming into kind of perimenopausal and menopause, with all the hormonal changes, there's a huge shift that goes with the estrogen reduction that affect our spinal motor neurons, our skeletal muscle, our connective tissue, our bone. And that also has such an impact on the pelvic floor.
Mm. So what might we face then if we were to think about impacts on the pelvic floor? Mm. If listeners today are thinking, well, I don't know whether my pelvic floor is in a healthy place or not, how would we know if it wasn't?
So you'd be having symptoms. There would be symptoms of a weak, a tight, a dysfunction of the pelvic floor. So coming to kind of a urinary side of things, and if we break it down into kind of urinary, bowel, and sexual dysfunction, the urinary side of things, you might experience bladder problems such as fully emptying your bladder, pain with urinating, problems with getting to the toilet in time, so having kind of leaks before getting to the toilet, or urgency, finding that you're really desperate to get to the toilet all of a sudden and maybe not getting there in time or just making it. Dribble down the leg when you stand up from the toilet if your bladder is not fully emptying. And then quite a common one, leakage with high impact movements or higher intra-abdominal pressure movements, such as coughing, sneezing, laughing, trampolining. So from a bladder point of view, you might experience problems with this. From a bowel point of view, you might experience problems with fully emptying again. Also pain, staining on the knickers, not being able to control your bowel movement and leaking before getting to the toilet in time. And again, the urgency side of things. With the sex, there might be problems with orgasm. There might be problems with pain, discomfort, feeling of not being able to have penetrative sex, or feeling of pain and discomfort, really. And then another symptom of where you might not be having kind of full pelvic floor function is if you're having feelings of heaviness and dragging or bulging sensation in the vagina or even at the anus. All these kind of symptoms would show signs of there being an issue of either weakness, underactivity, or overactivity of the pelvic floor muscles.
This is really interesting. So, Ben, I'm very open and I share a lot. The listeners are used to this, so it will not phase. But for me, when I started perimenopause, I started to notice changes when I was 36. So I'll be 39 next week. So it's been that good kind of 3 years. Mm. And for me, what's quite interesting about this is, as you've been talking through those three core areas of urinary, bowel, and sexual function, I never had any of the urinary side of things. So where the pain or fully emptying or dribbling or anything was a problem. Within the bowel, no, I wouldn't say so. But the sexual side, so sexual function or dysfunction, as I would say, for me, was a really, really big first indication of my perimenopause. Mm-hmm. So before we could really link that it was caused by the estrogen and progesterone dropping, for me, a lot of the symptoms were tightening, really painful sex, couldn't have penetrative orgasms. Oh my God, I mean, anybody listening to this, you will absolutely feel the pain with this. But when you are really hitting that point where you think, right, I'm ready, I'm going to go, and you lose the orgasm, you can't, you just can't, you can't climax. Yeah. It's literally soul destroying, not for just me, but for my husband as well.
Yeah.
So all of those things you've talked about there, you know, orgasm issues, the pain, the discomfort, the bulging and the heavy dragging feeling. That one was a really strange feeling. And I think it's reassuring to hear that actually within the space of the pelvic floor muscle group, it's a muscle, right? So we are able to repair it.
Exactly. And it is important to recognize these issues as issues. You know, they are common, and I think you do see them quite a lot, but they're not normal. And there are things that can be done to help with them. And I think a lot of people, the trampolining, for example, and sadly, the pain with sex, I think people just think, oh, well, it's normal. I've had a baby and that's what happens after having a baby. But no, there is things, and there are things that you can do to help and to resolve these issues. And that's where my job comes into play.
Well, let's jump straight into what can we do to support our pelvic floor. So how can we, if you are one of the listeners listening to this thinking, oh my God, all of the things that Jenny has shared, I am experiencing, or some of the things, what can our listeners do, or what can we do to support our pelvic floor?
That's a really good question, because unfortunately, there isn't a one rule fixes everything, because essentially we need to know if the pelvic floor is tight and overactive, if it's weak, or if it's too strong. So your pelvic floor might be showing signs of different kind of factors, or showing signs of these symptoms, but something like pain with sex would indicate a different sort of treatment compared to someone who's leaking when they cough and sneeze. So, for example, pain with sex might be because of a tight and potentially weak pelvic floor, whereas somebody who leaks with coughing, sneezing, and things like that would maybe indicate a weak and relaxed pelvic floor. So we do need to identify first what the symptom is and what's going on. But a rule of thumb would be to start the pelvic floor muscles moving, because whether you are tight or whether you are weak, we can definitely start getting those pelvic floors lifting and relaxing. And it's really important, and I think this is something that's not emphasized enough, is to relax the pelvic floor between your repetitions of doing your squeezes. So if we think about pelvic floor exercises, and we think about contracting the pelvic floor, I always give the analogy of squeezing the back passage as if you're stopping yourself passing wind. So just trying to isolate the anus and squeezing the back passage. So when we squeeze the back passage, we lift most of the pelvic floor. The anus actually sits in the middle of the pelvic floor, rather than where women think we need to squeeze to stop ourselves urinating, which is more at the front of the pelvic floor. So if we focus on the back passage, that's going to get a nice lift of the whole of the pelvic floor, and then to fully relax. So ideally, I come to bring the breathing into it. So we exhale as we squeeze, and we inhale as we relax. So coming back to that core cylinder with the diaphragm on the top and the pelvic floor on the bottom, when you exhale, your diaphragm contracts and lifts, and the pelvic floor lifts. When we inhale, the diaphragm relaxes, moves down, and the pelvic floor relaxes. So they work in synergy with each other. So they lift and relax, lift and relax. So if we can get the breathing involved with the pelvic floor movement, it really, really helps the pelvic floor to contract and to relax. So I would say, as my one tip for anyone who's having any sort of pelvic floor issues, bladder, bowel, sexual function, is to start with just your exhale squeeze, your inhale fully relax. And you can start by doing the pelvic floor exercises in a lying position to really get the feeling of the motion of the pelvic floor, then bringing it into sitting. And then if you're feeling a bit more confident and you're feeling quite happy with it, you can do them in standing and other positions. But it's better to really get that movement, feel for that lift and relax in a lying position where there's no pressure, no gravity, no intra-abdominal pressure, and you can feel that pelvic floor movement a lot better.
I love that. I've never heard it explained that way. So thank you. And just as you've been talking, I've been sitting doing my squeezing and relaxing. So it's very easy, isn't it, to do this? If we think about life is crazy busy, right? And even trying to remember to drink water can be quite challenging, especially, you know, we can have the glass of water right in front of us, but unless we are reminding ourselves to take a drink of that, we won't benefit from it. Yeah. So it's the same with pelvic floor. And it's not so much, let's take the word exercise away, because I think the psychology of using the word exercise, I find, and I don't know if you find this in your practice, but I find within my practice, when I work with ladies one-to-one, that if we start to use terminology such as exercise, we create this almost negative reality of, I'm not exercising, I don't like it. So it becomes this practice, doesn't it, of, let's just build it in. You know, if you've got in between meetings, let's do a breath practice. And as we're breathing, I love this, let's squeeze on the exhale, relax on the inhale.
Exactly. And it is about building it into a habit, because essentially, if you've had children and you're coming into that postnatal period, pelvic floor exercises are for life, and they are something that you want to build into a habit. It's like brushing your teeth. We do it automatically twice a day, no excuses. And it's something that we've built into our routine, into our life. And pelvic floor exercises need to kind of come into that movement as well. And like you said, you can do them here, there, and everywhere. It doesn't have to be something where you have to go somewhere to do it. You can do it at home. You can do it on the tube. You can do it on a train. You can do it anywhere to really kind of get that benefit.
So if you feel comfortable with this one, I'd love to dive a little bit further into the breath side with you. This isn't something that I have ever heard as part of pelvic health. And as you know, and the listeners know, I am a certified trauma-informed breathwork facilitator. So breath actually plays a massive role in what I do. So this takes, you know, I do about 3 to 4 different tailored breath practices in my own day, and I get my clients to do at least one centered breath practice every day. So if you feel comfortable going into this with me, I'd love to know, how do you incorporate breath into your practice for pelvic health?
Yeah, no, I'm big on the breathing side of things. And as pretty much any client who comes to see me would tell you, it's one thing that I really kind of emphasize on. So whenever I see anyone, doesn't matter what they come in to see me for, I would always check their ribcage movement, their infrasternal angle, and their diaphragmatic breathing. So checking those three things really gives me a good indication of how that diaphragm is moving, how they are breathing, and what effect that's going to have on the pelvic floor. So, for example, someone who comes in and they just chest breathe, so where they're just breathing up top, they're lifting and breathing their chest, but not getting anything into the base of the lungs and getting no rib cage expansion. I know that that is going to be having an influence on the abdominals, on the pelvic floor. And quite often than not, when we apical breathe, so breathe just in the chest, it is more of a shallow breathing. It's more of that kind of short, quick, fast breathing, which can be associated with stress or can be associated with anxiety. And that, again, has a big impact on the pelvic floor. The pelvic floor isn't going to be benefiting from that lovely movement that the diaphragm can offer it. So from checking these three things, I teach the patient, I teach the client to practice diaphragmatic breathing. So I practice with them breathing into the base of their lungs. And it's so interesting to see how many people actually really struggle with this. And actually really struggle to take deep breaths and to have that diaphragmatic movement. And then actually the impact that it can have on their pelvic floor and aid with the relaxation. Because if we're not taking in those deep inhales, we're going to be restricting that pelvic floor movement. Whereas if we can take in those nice big inhales, get that diaphragm moving, get the whole core cylinder moving, that pelvic floor is really going to benefit from it.
With anything, we can take it for granted that the body is just operational. And, you know, we wake up with this amazing tool. And over time, especially when we hit into, as you've covered off, perimenopause and then into postmenopause, we appreciate that through the perimenopause journey, that can last 10, maybe 12 years for some women, maybe longer. And as we journey through that perimenopause stage, we've got these complete changes to our hormonal balancing. So our estrogen, our progesterone, and for some ladies, our testosterone levels dropping.
Yeah.
And that can have an impact, testosterone as well, on the muscle mass, on the repair at cellular level. And the pelvic floor isn't immune to that. Absolutely. So as we start to see that drop, we can have the body struggle a little bit. And for some women, this is like you say, it's individual, right? It's not that everyone will struggle or suffer with pelvic floor dysfunction. But certainly, if you've been listening to this and you think, well, wait a minute, when Jenny was talking about those three areas of focus, being in the urinary tract or the urinary area, being in the bowel, and also within our sexual function, or for some dysfunction, then that becomes an aha moment. Is this something that you are suffering from or with? I know then from my perspective, and I'm just wanting to share this with you to kind of get your viewpoint. I was asked a lot by the ladies that messaged in after me sharing my fun on the Ninja Warrior obstacle course and the trampolines. Adele, like, how are you doing this without peeing yourself? Mm-hmm. And something that I feel and believe has really vastly supported my body over my early start to perimenopause was the years prior to that, when I was very active in resistance training. So because I was quite active in resistance training, lifting weights, working the core muscle groups a lot, I hadn't ever considered that the pelvic floor was being worked as part of that. But when you really think about it, you are, because you're bracing the back muscles, the core muscle groups, squeezing the bum cheeks together when you are lifting heavy weights. Yeah, because you need to protect that beautiful core and spinal group of bones. So we want to protect it. So for me, the resistance training, the weight training has been a massive part that I believe supported prior, so pre-menopause. Then as I've entered perimenopause, I've had some struggles that I've gone through, and the amount and the frequency of the resistance training has dropped to between kind of 2 to 3 times per week, just to hit those minimum requirements. But again, what I've realized with it is the resistance training has vastly supported alongside replacement of my estrogen and progesterone. So I'm keen to just hear your thoughts as the professional and the expert within pelvic floor health. Is weight training or resistance training something that you would advocate and say, you know what, yes, that's very helpful?
Absolutely. I would say that any sort of training is great. So I completely understand that weight training isn't for everyone, but that sort of training and that sort of kind of intensity of training is really important for not only our pelvic floor health, but like you said, on the whole musculoskeletal system, on bone health, on your respiratory system, on your cardiovascular system. It's all really impacted. But yes, specifically for pelvic floor, it's really useful and it really helps to strengthen the pelvic floor. There are studies that show when we do a pelvic floor squeeze, our abdominal muscles are engaged as well, and vice versa. Now, it's not that we want to be squeezing our abdominal muscles when we do a pelvic floor exercise, but when we train the abdominals, or when we're training the core, or when we're utilizing the core with our breathing as we're doing resistance training, then that massively impacts the pelvic floor because it's engaging the pelvic floor as well. And coming back to the breathing side of things, for example, you're doing a squat. You'd inhale as you lower down, pelvic floor is at a more relaxed state. Then as you exhale to come up against your body weight, against a bit of resistance, against gravity, your pelvic floor is having to work against that resistance as well. So you can see that even naturally, without having to just do your Kegels and your pelvic floor exercises, doing other forms of exercise is so important and actually essential, because the pelvic floor exercises, the Kegels, aren't just going to fix any problem. There is never one patient that I would see where I would just give them pelvic floor exercises. I would always combine another form of exercise. Doing a kind of a combined form of exercise is really important. So I would always get them doing pelvic floor exercises alongside breathing exercises, alongside weight training, or alongside other forms of body weight exercises, whatever's appropriate for the patient in front of me. And I think, you know, it's important for people who are listening as well to not just go out there and start weight training, because it is a process of actually building up that pressure, building up that resistance from an injury prevention point of view and from a pelvic floor health point of view. But Jeff definitely starting to get those foundation strengths in and then building upon that.
And I suppose when we talk about resistance training, this is something that I find that we need to be very quite clear on. What we're not talking about is, you know, jumping straight into CrossFit. We're not talking about lifting, you know, super heavy weights for your first time round. That wouldn't be advisable. But actually, yeah, it's using your own body weight. That is a resistance training. So rather than thinking, I need to join a gym, I need to get acquainted with all these, you know, scary poles, and we don't need to be doing that. But what we do need to do is look at the more resistance that we can put into our day-to-day through squats, lunges, walking. You know, walking's a brilliant one, right? Then we're able to really support our skeletal health and our muscle health. And in perimenopause, exactly, and postmenopause stages of life, it's actually quite, I would go as far to say that, you know, it's vital. And I would stand by that and laminate that word. It's vital for our menopausal health, not just from a pelvic floor, but as we look at the holistic view of the health of the body and from an osteoporosis and sarcopenia, which is the brittling of our bones and wastage of our muscles.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think with anybody in front of me, you would see kind of what their foundation level is, see what they're currently doing, and then look upon building it in a safe way. And it might be that for somebody, somebody's listening and they're thinking, well, I walk, but I don't really do much else. A really nice way of increasing that intensity safely would be to start doing inclined walks. So find a hill near you and start walking up the hills. Or if you go to a gym, go on a treadmill and pop the incline on, just to build a little bit of that cardiovascular system up, that respiratory system, which also really impacts your pelvic health. And also if people are there doing some squats or they're starting to do some lunges, then add in a couple of 2 kg dumbbells or something, just to introduce a little bit of weight or something that you feel you can manage. You don't want to go from 0 to 100. You want to build up that tolerance so that it's safe for your whole body, your whole musculoskeletal, cardiovascular and pelvic health.
Oh, so much value in just one episode. I could talk to you about this all day long. So thank you for gifting us your life currency today. It has been honestly such a pleasure to record this episode with you. I am absolutely sure that we are going to have requests for you to come back and join us again at some point. So if you have enjoyed this episode, then please do send us through some feedback. What has been your key light bulb moment or your massive takeaway from today? The DMs are always open and you can find me as always over on Instagram at adele.johnston or in emails adele@adelejohnstoncoaching.com if you want to share that with myself and Jenny. You can find Jenny Hughes over on a lot of different platforms. So Jenny, do you want to share with us if the listeners have any questions for you or they want to find out a bit more or even experience a bit about what you do to help with pelvic floor, how can they find you?
Yeah, of course they can find me on Instagram at fourtherapy, that's F-O-U-R therapy, they can visit my website and that has on there everything about kind of what I do from Pilates and physiotherapy and all the conditions and everything that I see as well from a pelvic health point of view, and that is at www.fourtherapy.co.uk. Or I'm happy to take any sort of emails at info@fourtherapy.co.uk as well. So very open to questions, emails, and anybody getting in touch.
Please do. If you have questions, do not sit on them. You have got an abundance of help at your fingertips, just one message away. So never sit with a question unsure. It can be the difference between you having an expert guide you to a solution or you living with a problem that just gets worse and worse and causes you severe anxiety and mobility issues. So please do not be one of those ladies. Stand forward, put on your queen crown and move into your space of abundance. It has been a pleasure, Jenny. Thank you so much, as I say, for your life currency today. And I look forward to learning more from you across on your social media platforms.
Thank you so much, Adele. It's been lovely to have a chat with you.
Okay, if you have enjoyed this episode, please do make sure that you send us a rating and a review. That is how we grow, that is how we flow, and we get out there into more of this audience space. With podcasts, the way that we do grow is by you sharing them and by making sure that you subscribe and review. So please do take a moment if you've enjoyed this episode and let us know what you've thought of it in one of our reviews. If I can recommend a 5-star review, then I will. And it helps us to reach more ladies around this world to share some facts and information with them that will help health and happiness. So as always, Jenny, thank you for helping us make menopause mainstream.
Thank you.
I truly hope this episode has sparked something vibrant inside of you. I ask only one thing. To help keep these episodes coming, please subscribe and share with another in your life. That's how we reach more women worldwide and we help them step into their power. Because together, we are working to remove any of the stigma and taboo that surrounds menopause. This does not need to be a daunting, a scary, a taboo time in anyone's life. So together, let's make menopause mainstream.